Did Bob McCowan just say what I think he said? You can rewind Primetime Sports Podcast when you subscribe at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports, now on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
I know you deceived me, now here's a surprise. I know that you have, cause there's magic in my eyes. I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles.
Hour number 3 of 3 for this Monday, the 30th of November, 2015. Nice if you could read the date. I'm Bob McCowan, that's Ken Reed.
I have challenges reading numbers, you have challenges reading dates.
30 days has to April, June, and November. Oh, it's the last day of November.
Is it the 30th today?
I just said that.
I thought it was
Thanks
the 29th.
Thanks for paying attention.
I told you I had challenges reading numbers.
It could be the 29th, it says the 30th here, but that...
We never know with that.
We never know.
It always says a rash is co-hosting when I usually am.
Paul Jones will join us in a bit. We'll talk about the Raptors who, we'll talk a little bit about the Raptors who lost on the weekend. But also that Kobe Bryant finally said, I've had enough of this nonsense.
Yeah. I want to know if Jonesy thinks that if Kobe Bryant created a lot of the nonsense.
Huh. Were they, the rest of them are bad and Kobe can't play much anymore.
But would the guys not want to play with Kobe because he made it bad?
I don't think so.
Well, that's what I can ask Jonesy.
Well, you can ask him. Meanwhile, baseball, and more baseball. It's a 12-month sport now. And especially here in Toronto, I have one good three-month span, and Toronto baseball fans just won't let up.
I listened to the first hour of the program. Holy smokes. I think there were 2 non-baseball-related calls.
Yeah, that's the most we've had. I think since the end of the baseball season, it is 95% baseball.
The guy that wants the Jays to get the submarine throwing knuckleballer, though, I'd like to see that guy.
I don't know.
Can you imagine that pitch?
I don't even know if you could do
that. I don't know if you could hold on to it.
Here's our friend Greg Zahn of Sportsnet. Hello, Zahnny. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. So, Happ and Chavez have been added to this team. And what I've tried to say to the impatient Blue Jay fans, and they're no different than fans in any other market at any other time, when you go through an off season, it's best to wait until the off season is over before you start trying to assess where the team is and what they've accomplished or not accomplished. But in Happ and Chavez, they get a couple of pitchers, one who was, both who have been here before. Well, let me ask you this. The fact that both of them have been here before, that LaCava has familiarity with both of them, do you think that made a difference?
Oh, sure. But I think the ultimate thing that made a difference is both of them got a lot better when they left the Blue Jays, and they're coming back as better pitchers. I don't think it matters how familiar Tony LaCava is with those guys. If they were the same pitchers that they traded away, that they didn't want on the ball club, anymore, then they wouldn't be back. But I looked at the numbers. I saw Happ pitch down the stretch for the Pirates last season.
He was great.
He was really great. Now, I always warn people, when you're coming from the National League or the West Coast, things are going to be a little different in the American League East, especially at the Homer Dome. It's going to happen. Things are going to be the numbers are going to be a little bit different than they were, say, for Chavez out in Oakland or Happ pitching in the National League. But there's no doubt in my mind, both guys are better than they were than when they were here before. Both of them are better pitchers. They've evolved, they've improved, and both guys are going to add some depth to the rotation. They still haven't obviously signed the big-name guy, the Greinke or the David Price. Whether or not they're able to do that or not is yet to be seen, but they're certainly a lot deeper than they were a few days ago.
How do you quantify, how do you compare a National League performance versus an American League East performance when you look at pure numbers? wins, losses, strikeouts, control, ERA. From an ERA standpoint, I mean, it's at least a half a run easier in the National League, and maybe even more than that.
At least.
I think you and I are on the same page on this. That's the scary thing about Hap. The only thing that's scary about it is he went to the National League and hung up National League-type numbers.
Yep. The thing that scares me about him is he's a fly ball pitcher in a home run ballpark.
Yeah.
That's the thing that scares me a ton about
But so is Estrada.
Yeah.
Yep. And you know what? I'm not saying it won't be better. I'm thinking Hap's going to be better than he was before. But, you know, it's still not going to be – you're not going to see him go 7-1 with an ERA under 2 for the Blue Jays in an 8-game span. I would be shocked to see that happen. Is he better than he was before? Yeah, he is. But, hey, listen, they needed some pitching depth. And, you know, unless you want to go out and spend $20 or $30 million a year on somebody – It's going to be tough. It's going to be really tough to get the kind of pitching that you need. There's a lot of depth out there in the free agent market right now. A lot of depth. You got Lackey's out there. You got Greinke, Price. There's some big name guys out there. Cueto. There's a lot of guys out there. But are they the best way to spend money? I'm not so sure. These guys are going to come in and they're not going to have the same kind of numbers that they put up last year. They're just flat out not going to. People need to understand that going in. So, you know, if Hap makes the start and he gives up a couple of homers in his first start back at the Rogers Center, don't panic. As long as they're solo shots, who cares? His big thing is he's going to have to keep the ball in the ballpark. And he lowered his arm slot a little bit. He was getting a lot more action on the ball. But he is what he is. And so – consequently, you're going to see the ERA balloon a little bit. And in the National League, you're facing 6 quality hitters a night, where you're facing maybe 8 in certain lineups in the American League.
Jordan Zimmermann was a guy that I thought the Blue Jays might have on their radar because he was going to cost you less than the Greinkes and Prices.
Yeah.
But he gets $110 million, $22 million a season on average from the Detroit Tigers. Did the Tigers way overpay for him?
No. No, Zimmerman's pretty legit. That's the price tag of an upper echelon pitcher nowadays. I mean, obviously, Zimmerman's not going to get that $25 to $30 million price tag because he's not Zach Greinke or David Price. He hasn't won Cy Young Awards. He's a tick below. I'd say he's probably a second-tier guy in a market where we're looking at probably 3 or 4 different tiers. He's tier 2. And that's what it cost, $20 million. Just short of, well, he got 22 per. And you know what? I think the Tigers, you know, they're getting exactly what they're paying for there. He's pretty solid.
Sonny, that's good on-the-spot math, buddy, breaking down that 110 over 5 to 22. I'm impressed, I got to tell you.
No, I already gave it. I gave it to him off the top.
Okay. I'll give the Mantlers credit anyway. So, Sonny, last year when Price came to town, you could see the players' chests puff out, right? They got that boost.
Yeah.
This year they might not get that boost. Does this hurt the club? Does it matter? Should the players suck it up? What do you do if you're a player?
Well, if I'm a player, I go out there and do my job. I got to worry about myself. You know, the one guy who's got an enormous amount of pressure on him now is Estrada. I mean, here's a guy, he had one good year in the big leagues. One. He just so happened to time it perfectly. So he got paid. Now he's got to go out there. And I hope he doesn't go out there and say to himself, well, now I've got to justify this, but that seems to be the natural reaction for a lot of guys when they get paid. You go out there and they forget that in baseball you get paid for what you did, not what you're going to do. A lot of people think that you're getting paid for what you're going to do. It's not the way it works. You get paid for what you did, and they have reasonable expectations for you to repeat that stuff, but I think we all know it rarely happens. So... Estrada's going to be, you know, he's not going to sneak up on anybody next year. He ain't going to sneak up on anybody. Chavez, these are guys are well-known commodities. They've got to go out and just do their job. And when you look at this ball club, you know, hopefully Ari Dickey will figure out a way to pitch like he does in August and September in the months of April and May. He's a notoriously slow starter. This is not... You can't expect the Jays to be in a position like they were last year and make this wild comeback and retake the division, go to the postseason. they're not going to sneak up on people anymore. I think and the Royals, they proved that these guys can be pitched to. They proved that there's ways to get these guys out. And if you're willing to put on your waders and go in there and do the dirty work, this is a club that can be beaten. So the Jays are going to have to go to spring training in February and understand that teams are probably not going to lay down for them anymore, and they're probably going to have to pitch a little bit better over the course of a full season versus just periods. But they've got a great club. This is a great club. I mean, offensively, they're almost all it's all there. They still, in my mind, need a little bit of work on finding different ways to score runs. I'd love to see this club, figure out ways to manufacture. We saw how important it can be in October, the ability to move runners, get people over.
Learn to bunt.
Bunt down. Well, Kenny, that's the thing about bunting. It's a dirty job. It takes a lot of guts to square around and put your nose in there against 95. Mm-hmm. Trust me. It's not easy. It's not glamorous. And you know what? It's so amazing how the things that you work on the first 2 days of spring training are always the things that end up killing ball clubs or making them champions when it comes time for October to roll around. It's unbelievable. You work on them the first couple of days. Everybody's rolling their eyes. They're all sitting there going, God, this is child's play. This is baby stuff. Why are we doing this? Everybody's feet hurt. Your back's sore. Everybody's tired of being. They don't want to be there working on PFPs. They don't want to work on bunts and hitting cutoff, man. And look at what happened. Look at what happened at the end of the season.
Right.
And this kind of thing. You work on them one time the whole year, and only the clubs like Kansas City or other young clubs like Minnesota, their managers are the only ones taking them out there at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon in July and August to work on bunt defense and actually get bunts down.
When is that going to get contagious? Because it seems the Kansas City pitching model is kind of becoming contagious now, maybe load up in the pen. When is, or has fundamental baseball ever been contagious? Because you don't make the highlight reels for putting down a bunt most of the time.
No, I don't think it's ever going to get contagious, to be honest with you, because the players are more worried about their double top secret handshakes than they are spending enough time to get the bunt down. I remember we were in Baltimore, or I should say the team was in Baltimore, and they called somebody up from the minor leagues, and he'd been there literally 5 or 6 hours. Somebody on the Jays hit a home run, and he already had his secret handshake. Already, first day in the show, somebody got to him and said, "All right, let's work on the handshake. How about going down to the cage and working on getting a bunt down?
Yeah.
How about, maybe work on hitting a cutoff, man?" I watched the pregame workouts of Major League Baseball players. I watch them go through the motions. I watch outfielders just lob balls in from the outfield. They don't practice the fundamentals. So when it comes time to execute and it matters, they're not able to do it. You hit the nail on the head, man. It's not sexy. You don't make highlight reels for hitting a cutoff, man. You make highlight reels for hitting bombs. Hello, my love. There's my little girl.
Hi, Ryan.
Yep, RJ. Hello, baby. She wants to see him hit the cutoff, man, and get the bunch down. It's just you look at the way these guys play the game, and it's no secret. I guarantee their agents are telling them, "Hey, focus on this. Focus on that. This is what gets you paid." But what wins championships is all the little dirty stuff. It's terrible. It really is, and it's not easy. I'm telling you. There's a lot of guys in the game when I played that made bunting look easy, but you have to put in the time. It is really easy once you learn how to do it properly, mm-hmm. but you got to want to do it. I was just petrified that if I didn't get a bunt down, Jim Leland was going to reach into my chest and pull my heart out.
Well, isn't it?
He was going to send me back to the minors.
If you're a fringe guy, isn't that one of the things that could put you over and put you in the bigs?
Like
those fundamental things?
It should. I can tell you, honestly, if I was managing a baseball team like the Toronto Blue Jays and I called up a kid from the minor leagues and I asked him to turn square around and get a bunt down and he couldn't get it done, he'd be on his way back to AAA the very next day.
Mm-hmm.
Very next day. If he's playing in the outfield and he misses a cutoff man his first day in the show, he's going back to AAA. There's no fear. There's no repercussion anymore. There's just no depth down there. So when they call a guy up, he's, like I said, he's already working on his secret handshake. so that, you know, when he gets, when somebody on the team goes deep, he looks cool when he gets on the television.
Among the other pieces of news today, Johnny Cueto turns down allegedly a 6-year, $120 million offer from Arizona. Is that Cueto saying I'm worth more? Is that Cueto saying I don't want to go to Arizona?
I think it's a little bit of both, to be honest with you. I think he's definitely north of 20 mil. There's no doubt about that. And he just saw Zimmerman get 22. That's one of the things. It's really tough when you're a free agent. If you're not the top dog, if you're not Greinke or Price, you're sitting there saying to yourself, when's the right time? What's the right number? Because if he waits too long, he doesn't get the 5 years. He might get three. If he signs too early, he doesn't get the $25 million. He might get the $22 million. He's waiting to see where the number for David Price and Zach Greinke is going to be, because he fancies himself just a tick below those two guys. So if both of them sign for $30 million per, if we're talking like 7 years, 210, Johnny Cueto is going to be asking for about $26 or $28 million per year.
Well, but the point here that I'd like to make is that, you know, we were talking about Jay Happ and his performance the last 3 months with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Now, granted, it's when he got traded from the American League to the National League, and that is a factor, folks. But Johnny Cueto gets traded from Cincinnati to Kansas City and essentially gets lit up. His ERA is 4.7 or something like that in his time with Kansas City. And his performance in the postseason, I would say at best, he was intermittent.
Yeah.
He had a good outing, maybe two.
He had bad ones,
but
too.
He had a couple of bad ones, too. Yeah. So how do you quantify the difference between good Cueto and bad Cueto?
Well, and he came from a ballpark in Cincinnati. It's just an absolute joke. Great American Small Park is what they call it. Honestly, Joey Votto's a great hitter, but he just flicks balls out to left field. Hits line drives to left center field that go in the fifth row. Cueto is legit. There's no doubt about it. You can't pitch that effectively in that tiny of a ballpark over the course of, you know, a full season and do the things that he did without having some ability. I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that, you know, in the National League, you are facing maybe six good hitters a night, maybe. And then when you come to the American League, you got to deal with the DH. You got to deal with a lot of guys that can bop. And who knows why Johnny Cueto didn't perform well in the regular season for the Kansas City Royals. I know a lot of guys when I played there had serious grip issues with the baseball. Kansas City in the summertime might be the hottest place on earth. And I've played in Florida. I've played in Texas where we had 100 straight days of 100-degree weather. Baltimore. Kansas City might be the toughest place to get a grip on the baseball. That's why you see guys like Sal Perez with pine tar all over them, because you just sweat so much. He might have had a little trouble. He also was probably a little nicked up. I think he was hurt when he came from Cincinnati to Kansas City. I really believe that he had a little bit of problem with his elbow or his shoulder. His velocity was down, and I'm telling you, when you're not feeling good, especially in a new situation where you're not going to say, "Hey, I'm banged up," then they're going to say, "Well, why did we trade for you?" He's going to go out there and chief it out, and you don't have any finish on your pitches, it's going to be a tough recipe. You're not going to be that successful. I think a little dose of cool air at the end of the season, you know, like you said, Bob, intermittent success in the postseason. He's a guy that, you know, he shimmies, he shakes, he spins, he does all kinds of weird stuff to try to throw guys off. A lot of gamesmanship in that arm. But at the end of the day, he's still one of the, in my mind, probably top 10 starting pitchers in the game right now.
Zonny, realistically, all these big name free agents out there, we can say whatever city they like about this city. Is it, for how many of them, percentage wise, is it just about the total value of the contract, just about the money, not about where they're playing?
For 99% of them, it's about the total value of the contract.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of guys that say they want to win, and I believe everybody wants to win. But at the end of the day, when you get an opportunity to decide where you're going to spend the meat of your career, the glory days of your career, that's a big decision. And you're talking about millions of dollars. And a lot of people don't know this, but, you know, hypothetically, if you get drafted out of high school, They own you for 4 years before they even have to do anything with you. You could be an A-ball for 4 years. They don't have to move you at all if they don't want to. Then they got you for three more years on the 40-man roster before they have to promote you to the big leagues. So they're seven. Now you're 25. And then on top of that, you could be with that organization for six more years before you're a free agent. You're 31 years old before you decide before you have a say in where you want to play.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't take lightly the fact that guys aren't going to walk away from. They're not going to pass up $5 million, $10 million here for the chance to play for a winner unless it's almost guaranteed. And as you can tell, Kansas City, they win the pennant back-to-back years. They win the World Series this year. Who saw that coming?
Mm-hmm.
Like, honestly, I mean, if you were the premier free agent 2 years ago, would you in a million years have thought, yeah, let me go ahead and take $10 million less on this contract to go play for the Royals? No chance. No chance. There's no guarantees anymore. There's no looking at a ball club like the 92-93 Toronto Blue Jays going, if these guys don't win, there's something seriously wrong. Because you knew when you saw that club, I was in A-ball AA at the time, and you looked at the Toronto Blue Jays, especially when they started adding those pieces at the trade deadlines, it was unbelievable. You thought, how can these guys not win the World Series? They were that good.
I want to talk about a couple of guys who are free agents, Zobrist and Davis. While we focused on pitching, and we assume the Blue Jays probably feel pretty comfortable with at least their starting eight, both of these guys are have skill sets. One, a left-handed power hitter who happens to play first base. The other guy can play anywhere. Is there room for either of these two guys? Would you be interested in either of these two guys?
I would love to have Ben Zobrist. I don't think anybody – I think you'd be crazy not to want Ben Zobrist. He's a guy that can he solves your second base problem right now. He could play short in a pinch. He plays the outfield if you want him to. Switch hitter, and he's a productive hitter at the plate. I don't see why anybody wouldn't be interested in him. Chris Davis, I love the power. I mean, he might hit 60 at the Rogers Center.
And it's left-handed power, too.
It's left-handed power, and he wears out the Blue Jays. Take him out of the Oriole lineup, and it's funny, too, because a lot of guys who wear out a team end up playing for that team because they're just like, wow, we can't – let's just get this guy out of our hair. Let's sign him.
Yeah.
Let him hit for us. But here's the thing. You're kind of hamstrung. Edwin's not going to play first. Or excuse me, he's not going to go back and play third, obviously, with Donaldson there. He's either going to DH or he's going to play first base. You might consider running a two-headed monster out there at first base, depending on,
One guy can DH,
Exactly. One can DH, one can play first. You give them both a little bit of time at first base to keep their legs fresh. But I don't know the numbers offhand, what Chris Davis's numbers look like as a designated hitter. Or if he's even done it that much, but how do you not like a guy that could hit 50 home runs?
Well, that's my point. And I mean, I know you already got three guys to play first base, but that gives you the opportunity to make some moves, that could get you some other pitching, whether it's out of the bullpen or the starting rotation. Plus Edwin is a year away from a new contract. And while I think most fans would like to see him stay, you've got to understand that both he and Batista are getting to that time where they are going to become depreciating assets.
Yes.
So you're going to, now is a better time to make decisions on those guys, as uncomfortable as you would be in doing it. Because if you wait till the end of the year, those decisions are going to be made for you, not by you.
Well, I agree with you. There's no reason to have a shortage of offense when it's available. But at the end of the day, priority would say that that's not really where they want to spend their money. They got enough power. They got enough offensive thunder power. They needed somebody that could put a ball in play and get a bunt down. I mean, like I said, they need to start figuring out ways to be a little bit more dynamic on offense. They need to start being able to manufacture runs. I don't necessarily think. I'm not saying I wouldn't want Chris Davis in the lineup, but I don't think they need another guy that's going to strike out 180 times a year and hit 45 homers. I don't think they need any more power. They need somebody that can set the table. They need somebody that can, move runners around. And they also, they need, some guys that can can make some moves out there on the field too. It would be nice to have a guy that could actually, you know, really pick it at first base.
Yeah, you had me there, Zonnie. It sounded a lot like Chris Colabella until you got into the latter part of what you were saying there. But defensively, he was pretty good in the playoffs.
He was pretty good at the end of the year.
My question for you is, where do you think Chris Colabella fits in going forward, Zonnie? Was this just a blip for him? Because, I mean, he's hit at every level he played at. Mind you, 7 years of those were independent ball. He's a great story, but where does he fit going forward with all this talk?
Yeah, it's a really great question. You know, he's definitely an asset. I don't mind. I like Chris Colabella on this team. He's got some pop. He's a quality hitter. He might be a guy that you move. You know, there might be somebody who's looking for some offense and a guy that can play. But you know, he doesn't play second base. If Edwin's at first base, who's going to DH? I mean, there's a lot of questions that need to be answered. The great news is you don't have to make up your mind with Chris Colabella. You don't have to do anything with him. He's yours. You're gonna pay him what you can, and you're gonna get some production out of the guy. But he's no defensive wizard, and you know he'll hit you you know upper 290s, low 300s, whatever. I don't know if he's gonna hit 330, 320 or whatever it was that he hit. Again, he's not going to sneak up on anybody next year, but he sure is a nice asset. I mean, he can play first base. He can DH one night. He can play the outfield if he had to. I mean, it wasn't the worst thing I ever seen, but the guy can hit, and when you can hit, they'll find a spot for you. We'll see how the things shake out with this team and what direction Mark Shapiro and then whoever they decide to name as the general manager are going to go. I know what my wish list would be, and obviously, it's not that radical. I mean, you need a frontline starting guy. I told people all the time, you have to have a guy that can match up against guys like David Price. Well, they went out and they got David Price. He said he liked being in Toronto. We'll find out whether it was lip service or whether the Jays are even in the market, whether they're even going to try, because they already know it's 7 years and it's somewhere around 30 mil per. It's north of 200 million. So do you want to make yourself an instant contender for the playoffs and in the conversation basically for the entire length of that contract? Because he's, even if he diminishes a little bit, he's still going to be a top tier guy.
Yeah.
Okay. So you play David Price for a second, and I'm going to play whoever the general manager is,
Mr. Moneybags,
which might be Shapiro,
which basically is Shapiro.
Yeah. David, you had a great year. We're glad you want to be with the Toronto Blue Jays. Here's what we're prepared to offer you. We're prepared to offer you a 4-year contract at $30 million a year, but after 2 years, you can walk. If the marketplace continues to escalate, you win. If not, you can choose to stay, and you're guaranteed $30 million over 4 years. Are you interested?
No.
Well, and then he walks. If somebody's willing to give him, you know, look at the Red Sox have said they'll pay 30 to 40 million above market, and market is 7 years, 210. So they're prepared to go 240 to 250. That is, we're now pushing $40 million a year.
Man.
Well, they might say that.
Well, I understand, but.
Because they might, if they push one of their competitors into spending, you know, talk them into spending a little extra dough. It hamstrings the organization. They're not able to get the other guy. I think that's all posturing. I don't think anybody's stupid enough to pay one guy $40 million a year yet. We're not quite there yet.
Sonny, you say posturing, and one of my things over the last week or so, all these reports would come in about David Price. There was a different one every day, and I was just saying, enough. Let me know when this is over. How much of this is just agents throwing this out and basically just negotiating through the media? Is it 100% that? Because I'm kind of thinking it is.
Yep. And let's not forget now, the internet and these bloggers and the social media and all these, they've given people a voice who typically would not have a voice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 20 years ago, if you didn't write a sports column or you weren't on a television program, you had no voice. There was no social media. There was no, people didn't blog back then. There was no credibility to somebody who wrote a blog about, you know, this or that. Now any old Tom, Dick, and Harry with the stroke of a keyboard can push some stuff out into the world, and all of a sudden, because it's on a blog or it's on social media, somehow people think it's credible.
Mm-hmm.
And hey, listen, if you were an agent, wouldn't you use the media? Wouldn't you use all these tools at your disposal to just pump that number up just more? Because at the end of the day, you're getting 5% of that big number, and 5% of $210 million, so that's a lot of money.
Zonny, lots to think about. I suspect we will have more to talk about before this offseason is over pertaining to the Toronto Blue Jays. Enjoy the baby. We'll see you soon.
Thanks. We'll see you soon.
See you, buddy.
Greg Zahn of Sportsnet. When we come back, Kobe announcing his imminent retirement. Imminent as in the end of the year. Time for a once around the league.
Yeah. Free gift tour.
Free gift tour, yeah. Paul Jones will analyze that when Primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
It's the only time you have control of Bob McCowan.
Let's go!
Subscribe to Primetime Sports Podcasts at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
One before the hour. It's Primetime on the Sportsnet radio and television networks. That's Ken Reed. I'm Bob McCowan. On the phone is Paul Jones, Raptors analyst. Hello, Jones. How are you?
I'm good, Bobcat. How are you?
Are you going to watch the Leafs and Oilers or the Browns and Ravens? It's kind of like Alphonse and Gaston here. You may have the four worst teams ever to play on a Monday night opposite each other. How the hell do you choose?
Well, they say football's the channel stopper, right?
Yeah.
And it is Monday Night Football.
And that is the Browns.
And it is the Browns. And who played in the first ever Monday Night Football game?
That would be the Browns.
That would be the Browns. And only you and I are probably old enough to have either A, remembered, and B, watched it.
Well, and what you have here essentially is the Browns versus the Browns.
Yes. That's what I always said. I always joke. Some guy in Baltimore is walking around with my Super Bowl T-shirt after Art Modell.
Stole the team.
I know he's dead and gone, but I'll never forgive him. Never.
Ever.
Never.
What a dink.
Now, he's dead and gone.
Yeah. Good. Okay. Good. I'm glad. It's about time. He died about 20 years too late.
Oh, Bobcat. Bobcat.
You got him going, Jonesy. You got him going.
Lightning bolts on your way. Reed, don't.
Oh, no, you can't be. You can't be.
I never do.
You can't take one of the original franchises in the middle of the night, put him in a van, and move him to Baltimore. You can't do that.
For how many
Art Modell can.
Well.
Money talks or it rides in vans?
Bastard. I'll never forgive him.
Oh, man.
Okay, Bobcat, it pains me too.
Yeah, well.
Pains me too. Every time I see that Ray Lewis dance, I'm like, that should have been in front of the dog pound.
Well,
but, well, you know. As Kobe says, we move on.
Speaking of Kobe.
Good segue.
Well, I mean, this is not too surprising that Kobe wants to have a going away tour. He wants to make sure that everybody knows that he's retiring, knows how great he was, and has the opportunity to put together a long list of extraordinary gifts for him at every stop along this tour, which is fine since he can't play anymore and his team stinks. What do you make of all this?
Well, look, I thought he had really telling comments at the end of the 2012 Olympics. And that was like 3-4 years ago when he said he basically said, I could see the finish line. And he then said, I'd still like to have one more cookie, I believe was his exact words. And because they were asking about the MVP, and he was like, you know what, I don't care about that, but I would like to have one more cookie, which means he was hoping to get one more championship because he wanted to be on par with Michael. And a lot of people, I mean, he's a polarizing guy, and he's hard to cheer for. And Ken, you and Bob both know this. People that are athletically, people that are at the top of their game sometimes are very hard to like. They're not exactly the most popular people. And Bobcat, we go back to a guy even like Jim Brown, who I'm not putting Kobe as the same comparison with Jim Brown and Muhammad Ali and people like that, but they didn't care what you thought. Like, it's not a popularity contest. I'm trying to win here. I'm trying to do something here. And Kobe came across like that. So, and there are people in our business that are taking great delight now at his demise. The same way they did with, you know, like Tiger Woods and people that, you know, are looked at like that and are not always the most accommodating with people in our business. When it goes downhill, people are ready to kick dirt on him.
Yeah, but you know what? This is interesting. I don't disagree with anything you said, except this. Michael Jordan wasn't accommodating to the media. Michael Jordan wasn't forthcoming. Michael Jordan wasn't a social leader as an African-American at a time when he was unquestionably the most talented and most the best-known professional athlete anywhere.
Can I give you a Sir Mix-a-Lot, a big butt in there?
Okay, go ahead.
Michael did enough with the media and enough of the cordial, let's chat and laugh and I'll be accessible or make it feel like I'm accessible to you guys to stave off the Wolves. He did. And guys like Kobe and Tiger didn't. Tiger's trying to do it now that he's, I don't know, 200th in the world or whatever.
Yeah, now nobody wants to talk to him.
Exactly. But you know what? With Tiger, though, it doesn't look authentic. Like it just,
well, of course, it isn't authentic. And it wasn't authentic with Jordan. And it's, you know, at least Kobe was, you know, a dink and we all knew it and he didn't seem to care about it.
Well, and that's just it. And that's why people are taking, you know, as I say, great, great glee in his demise and looking at him shoot 4 of 20 and killing him and he can't play. And yeah, he can't play now. He's, you know, he's older than dirt.
So, Jonesy, let me ask you this one.
Day, you couldn't deny how good he was. And the fact that he wasn't accommodating upset people in our business.
Yeah, but I never cared because I never talked to Michael Jordan and I never talked to Kobe Bryant. So they're like equals to me. Should I, and I mean, in my mind, best player I ever saw was Michael Jordan. Kobe Bryant isn't even in the conversation.
Where is he, Bob? Is he a top 10, top 15?
He's for sure top 10.
But does he think he's in the conversation?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I just don't think he's in that conversation. Is he for you?
He wanted to get the sixth ring to be in that conversation. Because, I've been through this all day, and I've tried to resolve this in my mind. I'm going to call all these guys who had a wingman, a Robin, a good team around them to win championships.
They all did.
Except Bobcat, I would say the one guy, the exception to that is Michael. 6 trips to the finals, 6 MVPs, and people are like, oh, Scottie Pippen. Ah, Scottie. Scottie was good, but they'd have found another guy to play defense. People came to Michael to win. LeBron went to Wade. Wade had Shaq. Shaq had Kobe. Kobe had Shaq. It's a team effort. And Michael, I feel, was the only guy that, you know what? I'm winning it whether you're here or not.
Maybe.
I mean, even a guy like Tim Duncan, he was great. He might be close in that category too. But he still had Tony Parker. He wasn't a finals MVP every time. He lost once in the finals. All of those things. And that's why, to me, Michael stands in that regard on top.
Yeah, but you're diminishing the significance of Scottie Pippen. I mean, you're entitled to do that. I mean, you can have your opinion on Scottie Pippen.
Scottie's a great player.
He's certainly top 50 all time.
Yeah, he was, and he also played with Michael.
So you think Scottie Pippen without Michael is just another guy?
No, I didn't say that. I said he was a very good player. But Michael could have found somebody else who was a very good player along the same lines of Scottie to run with Michael, and they would have won the championship.
Yeah, I don't argue that. I mean, the other guy he had too for at least a couple of those championships, I don't remember how many, was Dennis Rodman.
Yeah, Rodman.
And Rodman was a big-time player in terms of what he did.
He was. No question about it. The same way when Kobe won his, Shaq was a big-time player.
And oh, my God. Well, it was Kobe and Shaq. It wasn't Kobe with Shaq.
True. And when Kobe won his two without Shaq, which he's probably more proud of than anything else.
For sure.
Right.
And because, remember, when he got the fifth one, he said, what does it feel like to get five? He goes, I don't know. I got one more than Shaq. And he had people with him. Pau Gasol is a heck of a player.
You betcha.
Pau Gasol is a heck of a player. And the supporting cast, hey, Derek Fisher was right there with him too. The supporting cast. Kobe, I think people will look at it in that sense, like Kobe tried to do it like Michael, but he wasn't on that level.
I agree.
He's a top 10. He's probably a top 10.
That's
top
what
50.
I said. Yeah, I agree.
So Jonesy, he hasn't had anybody with him in the last few years. Is that his own fault? If someone were to call him a selfish player, a selfish athlete, how would you respond to that?
In his latter years, Kenny, I would say yes, because mm-hmm. The sword has two edges. The thing that your strength is your weakness if you can't control it. He was maybe the ultimate alpha dog. I'm getting the shots. I'm taking this. I mean, I once heard the great line from Patrick Ewing in New York, of all places. He said, yeah, I'm taking the last shot because if we lose, I'm going to get blamed anyway. So I'm going to take the shot. And that was kind of Kobe's mentality, I felt. And it's pervasive, and it's still there, even though he's 30-whatever years old and still can't do it. That stubbornness, that I'm the man, I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. Forget everybody else. We're doing it my way. It's now costing him, I think, or maybe the organization a little bit, because people are saying, well, I'm not going to go there. Right. As long as he's there, it's his team.
So next year, is that a prime free agent destination once again? Go play for the Lakers because Kobe's not there.
With all that money they have to spend,
yeah.
You bet.
Yeah, absolutely. I think like, this hugely changes the LA Lakers, not, and in a good way. It probably would have been in a good way if you said goodbye 2-3 years ago.
So let me ask you this. So Kobe has been a diminishing asset for several years, injured on a couple of occasions, serious injuries, et cetera, et cetera. The Lakers have tumbled to inexplicable lows. If Jackson had decided, if he could have still kept coaching, what kind of a difference do you think he would have made?
Run that by me again, Bobcat. Somebody called him. I called waiting. I forgot to cut it off.
What happens to the Lakers if the coach stays?
Phil has a great way, and I remember talking to Derek Fisher about this. You know, we talk about this in the NBA. Bobcat, I got a book full of plays downstairs. But can you be a leader of men? Can you get them to buy into the cause, the we greater than me idea? The same way a guy like Doc Rivers did when he was in Boston, and the great coaches do. And it doesn't matter how you do it, but you get them. And that's even.
Well, and Phil's weird. We both would acknowledge that Phil is a strange bird.
Well, but as Derek Fisher said, he touches you in a certain way.
You bet.
He touches your soul. And if they would have allowed Phil to stay in Chicago, had Jerry Krause not saying, I relished a chance to win without Michael, and Michael said, oh, really? Go ahead. And remember how bad they were for years.
Mm-hmm.
And had they
Quick,
left
Jones.
Phil there, had Phil not been kind of pushed out in L.A. the same way, where he was doing what he did, and everybody around him and people above him thought, and that's the ultimate, when you're doing your job well, everybody looks and says, well, heck, I can do that.
Yeah, must be easy.
And they pushed Phil out. Had they left Phil there, in my opinion, he would have melded that team together, had them come together, and had Kobe and Shaq, whatever feuding there was, leave it aside for the court and get on the court and play. And he was able to do that in their time there. Had they left him there, who knows where they would have gone.
But they're a better team.
They would have been.
Yeah.
Would have been a way better team.
Yeah, we got to get out of here. We're out of time. Thank you, Jones.
All right.
See you soon.
All right.
There's Paul Jones. Kobe will hang up the sneakers at the end of the season. You rank him in the top 10? Top 5?
Not top 5. Top no. 10. Well, what would we want for retirement gifts if we were to tell, the public we're going to all retire in 10 years? You always get a carving of some sort, it seems, someone will do ultimately give you a wood or stone carving.
When you make $30 million a year like Kobe and have been doing it for so many years, what can you get that you
exactly.
can't buy? I mean, I think that's the kind of thing he's looking for.
Love and adoration.
He ain't getting that. Thanks to Zahn and Jones. We'll see you tomorrow. Good night from Toronto.